Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. It is 411 here, 83 degrees on this Tuesday, July 1st, 2025. And as always on Tuesdays, we bring in Tommy Marquez, Navy veteran who was a senior staffer in Congress for many years, and now he helps us navigate that veteran system for our plentiful veterans out there. Tommy, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob, as always.
So what's on the agenda this week? You've been a busy guy.
Man, I have been so busy. But, you know, I listened to your show, and before I get started, I just want to comment on the Brian Kohberger case. This is an example, again, of just, you know, it's a thin line between the dirt baggagery between a prosecutor and the assailant, you know, the person who did these horrible crimes. This is just ridiculous that they didn't contact the family. I'm not an expert in the legal system, you guys, but I am an expert just on human beings, right? And the idea that this prosecutor, to make a name for himself, is going to go out there and do this and not talk to the family is just appalling to me. And I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on with our legal system. I'm really starting to lose faith in it, Rob. I really am. You see a situation like his, you see a situation then in turn like Mike McMahon or some of the treatment of our January Sixers. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I hear you. It's pretty frustrating, to say the least.
And it draws to my mind, like, what is going on with the way our nation treats our heroes? Are people that we, you know, rely on. Everyday people, right? We heard the story earlier, and you covered this story as well earlier in the week, Rob, about those firefighters in Idaho being trapped to be shot. It's just absurdity to me. And I have concerns for how we treat our veterans. I have concerns for how we treat our law enforcement. And I didn't think that we would have to be concerned on how we treat our firefighters, but I guess they're in it now too, where I'm not sure what's going on in this nation, but hopefully that person, you know, who did that, you know, he meets his fate in the next life. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I wish this guy Kohberger, I don't know if he did it or not.
Well, you know, he's about to confess that he did it. So plead guilty.
Yeah. I don't know the whole situation, but this prosecutor, I hope that he's not in charge of more cases like this, because the victims, the real victims and the family members of those victims deserve better than this. And that's all I have to say about that. But hey, there's a million other things. And I want to end on a good note, because that story just really bummed me out today. The big, beautiful bill looks like that's getting passed. And people are going to say, well, Tommy, what does that got to do with our military? Well, I'll tell you, Rob, there's $150 billion in funding for the Department of Defense in that bill. And I know everyone thinks that this is now law. So I just want to say this to people so they understand. We are not out of the woods. Not at all. Because this has to now go back to the House. And Speaker Johnson is going to have an uphill battle trying to get this sold, because you already have many Republicans, and they don't have a big lead there. I think it's a lead of three in the House, which is separate from the Senate. And you already have Massey saying he's going to vote against it. We are not sure about Congressman Biggs. We're not sure about Chip Roy. We are not sure about Ralph Norman. They all have different reasons. Each of them are unique, and the reason why they voted against it previously or slowed up the process in getting it passed. So we'll have to see what happens if it comes out. But there's a lot of good items in there for our military, including a Golden Dome, a Homeland Missile Defense Project. And if anyone thinks that's a waste of money, ask Israel right now or any of our bases in the Middle East if they think a Golden Dome is effective, because it is protecting our interests in the Middle East. Now we got to have something like that here in the United States. Another big thing that we talked about, Rob, is did you see that the VA is just crushing it? We talked about it last week, but not only did they put out that press release about that they processed more disability claims than they ever have to this point in the year, Rob, and they're probably going to break the record. But also the backlog reduction is at record low, and with the budget, the VA is going to get a 10% increase. So
that's the big thing that I jumped out. We've heard the rhetoric for the past couple of months, how they're cutting the VA. They're laying off staff at the VA. They're cutting benefits for the VA. How much extra is the VA getting? What is a hundred and something? What's the number?
Well, I'm not really good at math, but it's a 10% increase on $441 billion. So rough math tells me that's like $44 billion more. And that goes back to discretionary and mandatory funding, and it increased healthcare. And for all the people who are like, oh, it's decreasing healthcare, that they're cutting the VA, this proves that it's not, because it directly goes to healthcare. And that money cannot be, since it's mandatory, cannot be used in other means. But also toxic exposure benefits, compensation and pensions and other critical programs that the VA has underfunded for quite some time. So it's getting an increase. So the VA is going to be, to my knowledge, the only federal agency other than the DOD that's going to get, and the DOD's increase is very small, not 10%, that's getting an increase. So the idea that Trump was going to come in and take away VA benefits is absolutely absurd. I think what we've seen, I keep saying this, and I know I'm like on repeat, but the biggest shift in the VA isn't just the money, though. It's the culture. And that's what Secretary Collins is doing. He's like one of these NFL coaches that comes into a locker room. We've seen it happen in football all the time. And they change the mindset of the organization from the top down. They bring in their people. You'll see them bring in their quarterback or people, veterans that they know that could come into a locker room and change the atmosphere. That's what Secretary Collins and President Trump are doing. And they're transforming the VA from a bureaucracy that once really only prioritized internal processes and employee protection to a different kind of organization that is more results-oriented and has a veterans-first mentality. And that's important in that institution, because now this agency is operating more like a competitive service provider, like Sprint versus T-Mobile versus Verizon, where the rates just get better and better and the service just gets better and better because it's competitive. Those three cell phone providers, right? That's what the VA is getting the mindset of. Like, we're competing to give the best service to our veterans. And Americans, veterans, and their families should be the most important customer base that our nation has, and they deserve nothing less than the excellence that is coming out of this current administration right now.
Yeah, just... It's just utterly amazing how we're moving forward with this.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see, and if this happens, I'm telling you, I'm going to get a tattoo of Trump if we get rid of the nation's backlog, I swear. Because the backlog has been something that was almost gone away during the first administration, then COVID happened, and everything went haywire, right? But the VA backlog, which was once, I think, 300,000 claims long, and it was a 3-4 year wait, is getting just decimated. They're on a record pace for that. They've already reduced it by 25% since Trump took office as of May. So if he gets it done in 1 year, that tells you it is not a numbers game. We get more productivity from volunteers than we do out of prisoners. It's just proven. You want people there who want to serve veterans, and I think that's what we're getting. And having this increase so that veterans can get better health care, both in the VA and outside in the community, I think is paramount to achieving that, Rob.
No doubt. No doubt indeed.
And then the last thing I want to cover, let's talk about Bill Ritenour. I cannot believe this, Rob. I got a letter to the president for a 101-year-old World War II veteran wishing the president a happy birthday and thanking him for throwing the Army parade, as he is an Army veteran of World War II. He was stationed in the Philippines when the Philippines were taken over. Thanks to Secretary Collins and his staff for getting that done. And you posted this, Rob, on your social media. President Trump actually wrote him back and gave him a really nice letter thanking him for his military service. And President Trump mentioned on there that he was super proud that his birthday falls on the same birthday as the United States Army, and what that meant to him, not only as an American, but as a president. So I thought that was super cool. I was super happy to do that. And if you guys haven't heard that story, please go to Rob's social media pages. He put it there on Facebook. I saw it. And you can meet Bill Ritenour and give Bill some birthday wishes. His birthday is coming up at the end of July. So it's awesome that I was able to help in that and get that veteran a letter to Trump, but it was even greater for our president to take time out of his busy, busy schedule to write back to a 101-year-old World War II veteran. Isn't that awesome, Rob?
Oh, it's just incredible. Just incredible. He's going to be 102 coming up on his next birthday. You know, wanted to get it. And listen, you found out about the story. You got the birthday card from the veteran. You reached out to your contacts in the VA. Made its way up to the secretary of the VA, where it was hand-delivered to the president himself. And again, within short order, the veteran had a thank you note from the president for his birthday card. So just outstanding work. You know, how could I not publicize something like that? Just a great story.
Yeah, it was a really great story. And I'm proud to have helped in that process. I got to be honest with you, when they approached me about it, Rob, I told them I can't even get warm French fries from McDonald's. Do you guys think I could get a letter to Trump in response? I said, I'll try. And unbeknownst to me, it all worked out. And I think that's not because of me. I think that's because we just have a freaking awesome president and a freaking awesome secretary of the VA. I cannot believe that you walked that in there. That was super cool.
No doubt. No doubt indeed. Tommy, I appreciate you joining us today. As always, we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Hey, look forward to it, Rob. See you then.
All right.
Happy 4th of July.
Yeah, you too, you as well, my friend. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So, the Air Force and Space Force has met its recruiting goals 3 months early. Second force to do so. The Navy has as well. And now you have the Air Force and Space Force. And this is just not an anomaly. We've seen recruitment struggles over the past couple of years, and I think it's easy to say why. But now all of a sudden, when our military, especially our Air Force and our Navy, have been at the most up-tempo they've been in a very long time, have seen the greatest influx of recruits, meeting their recruiting goals much earlier. And the Marine Corps has met their recruiting goals all along, so there's no doubt that they will as well. And the Army's on pace to meet their recruiting goals. But the Navy and the Air Force have lagged behind, as well as the Army, in the past. All four services are on track to make their goal, but the Navy and the Air Force and Space Force have met their goals 3 months early this year. So that's just goes to show you when there's leadership that people look to, when there's the right morale in place, there is a drive to be part of that. And you're seeing that. Make no mistake, you're seeing that. And if you or someone in your family, a young one in high school or even in college, are looking for the military as a career, make no mistake, there are plentiful of opportunities. There is a good living to be made. There is a secure living to be made. There is great training to get if you want to look to do something else. I have many friends whose children were in the military, and they're doing extremely well for themselves. From being a mid-enlisted person to using the military to go get your master's degree and then work for a major corporation to where you are now in charge of your commanding officer, who used to be your commanding officer when you were active duty in the military. That's how the opportunities there are out there, and they're very real. I personally know people who are in this position to where they were a staff sergeant in the armed forces, got training, used the GI Bill to get their master's degree after they got out, wanted to get into the private sector, got into a company basically working on the same equipment or developing the same equipment that they were working on in the military. And it turns out now they're in charge, they're a program director in charge of their former commanding officer. Imagine that turnaround. Imagine that turnaround. I mean, you have a college degree and you want to go into ROTC or the OT programs, OTS training programs. It is great opportunities out there between the pay, between the basic housing allowance that you would get for being where you are. It's truly a great opportunity. So it's good to see the young men and women out there doing these things. and getting this experience and interested in serving America again. So congratulations to this Air Force and Space Force for meeting their recruiting goals 3 months early. Recruitment levels largest in 10 years for the Air Force and Space Force. So there's that. It's 4:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 4:36 here at WILK. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home in law enforcement who made the ultimate sacrifice. On this day, we have two. Police officer Connie Smith Hawkins, Chester City Police Department of Pennsylvania, on this day in 1993. Police officer Connie Hawkins was shot and killed when she responded to a 911 hang-up call in the 200 block of West 5th Street at approximately 11:30 p.m. When she knocked on the door, a man inside suddenly opened it and fired one shot, fatally wounding her. The man, who was a Philadelphia Housing Authority police officer, then murders his ex-girlfriend before fleeing the home. He was later stopped by Delaware State Police and arrested for DUI. The gun used in the murder, Officer Hawkins, was located in the vehicle. The man was convicted of Officer Hawkins' murder and sentenced to death. Officer Hawkins had served with the Chester Police Department for 3 years. She was survived by her husband and son. And Patrolman Henry C. Stout, Reading Police Department in 1924 on this day. Patrolman Henry Stout was shot and killed while making an arrest at the corner of 11th Street and Pike Street. Patrolman Stout had caught the subject trying to burglarize a business when a struggle ensued. The suspect was later apprehended and executed. Patrolman Stout had served with the Reading Police Department for 8 years. And those are our two from today on this day, July 1st, 2024. And I just wanted to, on that note, I saw that in Philadelphia, there were a bunch of different entities that went on strike today, including their 911 operators. And it just goes to show that the need and dependence we have for our most basic systems, something we don't really think about. A lot of us have never had to call 911, but a lot of us have. A lot of us are on the other ends of those calls, and how important that whole process is from that operator you get, that dispatcher at 911, and if it's relayed to a police dispatch or done directly from them to the officers themselves coming. You know, we read a story just now from the Chester Police Department of a 911 hang-up call. You have no clue what the call is. Someone called 911 and it disconnected. Because of the Annie Alley, because of the, they knew the address, they dispatch an officer there. Unknown reason, 911 hang-up call. And as you're going there, was it a kid playing around? Is it somebody who really needs help? Is it something that maybe somebody thought it was something and it turned out not to be? Maybe there was a bang on the door and instead of an intruder, it turned out to be, you know, your kid or your sister or brother coming over and was playing games. That's why if you ever have to call 911 and it is a mistake, tell them. Tell them what the error was. It's not a no harm, no foul. Because this officer that we just talked about opened the door and was shot. That's it. No warning. Unknown reason why they were there, just a hung up 911 call. No other information. So, the public service announcement I want to put out for this, that if you ever call 911 mistakenly, stay on the line. Let them know. Say, hey, you know, I thought someone was breaking into my house. It turned out to be my brother-in-law messing around with me. You know, it was my sister, and she's got a bottle of wine, and she was messing with me. Tell them that. Let them know. And even if they come by and make sure that that's exactly the case, say, yeah, I told the dispatcher that it was a mistake. You know, here's my sister. Here's whatever it is. But get that information out there. Just don't say, oh, you know, I feel dumb or stupid because I called 911 and I shouldn't have, didn't have to, because they're going to probably come anyway. So, you know, a little word of advice, something that seems trivial and really not that important, but it is, because that thought process, that anxiety of heading to some situation that they don't know, and knowing that there's situations like I just read you, where they knock on the door and someone shoots through the door, or someone opens the door and shoots without question or any warning. So, it's a simple PSA from a not-so-simple segment. It's 4:41 here at WILK. It's time for 2020 Traffic and Weather Together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 4:45, 78 degrees. It's time for Today in History, but I'm seeing some breaking news that there is a partial verdict in the Diddy trial, the P. Diddy trial, Sean Diddy Combs trial. He is facing multiple counts, five counts, racketeering, conspiracy, sex trafficking by force, fraud or coercion, transportation, engaging in prostitution, sex trafficking by force. And the last charge was just taken off the screen, so I can't tell you. But the jury has reached a partial verdict in the trial, and we will get to you. The last count is transportation to engage in prostitution. That's count five. So we will get the verdict when it comes. Until then, we'll get on with the show here. So we'll see what the verdict is in a few minutes, I guess. Well, this day in history, July 1st, 1863, the Battle of Gettysburg begins. One of the most significant battles in the American Civil War began on this day in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. It would last for 3 days and result in a Union victory that marked a major turning point in the war. The battle remains the deadliest in U.S. history with over 50,000 casualties. 1963, the U.S. postal zip code system is introduced. The zip code zone improvement plan, that's what ZIP stands for, right? Zone improvement plan code system is implemented by the United States Postal Service to improve mail delivery efficiency. The original zip code mascot, Mr. Zip, help promote the new system. 1898, the Battle of San Juan Hill, Spanish-American War. U.S. forces led by Theodore Roosevelt and his Rough Riders charged up San Juan Hill in Cuba. It was one of the most famous battles of the war and helped cement Roosevelt's national fame, later propelling him to the presidency. 1997, on this day, Hong Kong returns to China. While not a U.S. action, the transfer of Hong Kong from British to Chinese control marked a significant global event, closely followed by U.S. governments and media. Some notable legislation and government events. 1971, the 26th Amendment was certified. The 26th Amendment was formally certified, lowering the voting age from 21 to 18. The change was driven by the Vietnam War era slogan, old enough to fight, old enough to vote. That was 1971. Some famous birthdays today. Carl Lewis, 1961, legendary Olympic track and field athlete, nine-time gold medalist. Estee Lauder, 1908, founder of Estee Lauder Cosmetics Company and major figure in American business. And Liv Tyler, 1977, actress known for Armageddon and the Lord of the Rings series. And on this day, we remember Harriet Beecher Stowe, abolitionist and author of Uncle Tom's Cabin, a book that galvanized anti-slavery sentiment in the U.S. And that's our Today in History. And as I'm watching the TV closely, again, the jury has reached a partial verdict in the Diddy trial as far as the five counts he's facing. We're waiting for them to read the... Let me see if I can get anything online because I do not have sound. Let's see if I can find anything here. Yeah, Justin, jurors in Sean Diddy Combs' trial tell the judge they have reached a partial verdict but do not have consensus on the racketeering charges. So it appears there will be a hung jury on the racketeering charge from what I'm seeing here. As far as what has been found in other charges, it's we're waiting for that to be brought out. So, but the jury has reached a partial verdict in the trial. It is raining in New York City, as it is in a lot of places right now. Just know that there is that rain coming through our area. South of us is a lot heavier than what we're dealing with here. Texter just texted, another case where somebody was charged with trafficking humans to nobody. This was a very lengthy and in-depth trial. based on what it is and what it's about, I think this is going to be more of a who's who after the fact than it is now. I think a lot of people were shielded as far as this trial goes. But count one is racketeering conspiracy. That seems to be the highest count and the one that they are deadlocked on. Sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion is count two. Transportation to engage in prostitution. Sex trafficking. And basically interstate trafficking for prostitution. The jury has reached a partial verdict. I'm waiting to see either on social media or the TV if something comes out. It appears the racketeering charge, the number one charge, the jury, from what they told the judge, they cannot come to a consensus on it. So that sounds like that charge would be a hung jury on that. But we're trying to see now. They are in Manhattan Federal Court in New York City. Live, it's coming up on 4:51 here at WILK. We're going to break and see if we can get some more information, but at this time we're waiting for the jury to read their verdict to the judge or judge's instructions about the racketeering charge, where it appears, based on their note to the judge, they do not have a consensus on the racketeering charge, but they have reached a partial verdict in sex trafficking. So we'll be back with hopefully an update in just a minute. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 4:54 here at WILK, 78 degrees on this Tuesday, July 1st. There is a partial verdict as per the jury in the Sean Diddy Combs trial. And they said that they cannot come to a consensus on the racketeering charge, which is the RICO violation, which is the most serious here and carries a penalty of life in prison. So the mere fact that they cannot reach a verdict on that is a big deal, because that's the charge that could put him away for life if that's what he's sentenced to. There is that ability for the racketeering RICO charge on this. As far as what I'm finding here, it says they have reached a verdict on 4 of 5 counts, but were unable to decide on the racketeering conspiracy charge. Again, that RICO. I am hearing that both the defense and the prosecution, along with the judge, are instructing the jury to go and continue deliberations. I'm seeing on the TV that Sean Combs's daughter just made her way back to the courtroom. So if they force the jury to continue to deliberate and they become hung on that charge rather than just a consensus that they can't agree, that's a bigger deal. But at this point, I don't know if we're going to get any information on what the results are on the other charges. If the judge is going to instruct them, and for what I'm seeing from courtroom reporters, is the judge says that they will keep deliberating. The jury reached a verdict on 4 of 5 counts, and the judge is asking them to keep deliberating on the single count that they cannot come to a consensus on, which is the racketeering, the RICO charge, which will carry life in prison. So I don't think we're going to get an answer as far as the results of those four charges until they come to some conclusion. And how longer they let this go on, it is getting close to 5 o'clock. Do they keep them for a couple more hours and tell them, you know, sleep on it, come back tomorrow and try again? If they come back with the same thing, you know, can he be charged again on that charge if it's a hung jury, if they do not get to a consensus on it? This is not something a prosecution would want to hear, but that RICO charge, that racketeering, is the most serious charge, which carries life in prison. So we'll continue to monitor this. It looks like family and entourages are continuing to enter back in to the courtroom to see where they're at. Again, unknown what the judge was going to let happen. But from reports, I'm hearing that the judge is asking the jury to continue deliberations, but they said they have reached a verdict on the four remaining charges. We do not know what they are, but we'll keep you posted and see what it is. So the weather the other day that came through here, not too bad, but it really hit the New York City metropolitan area. Basically shut down JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark Airport. This was thunderstorms in the area, severe thunderstorms that grounded all planes in those three airports. Because of that, it caused thousands of flight delays up and down the East Coast. It just goes to show how that domino effect and how important these hubs are. More and more airports, and our airport here at Avoca does it. You know, they fly to Chicago, they fly to Charlotte, they fly to Philadelphia, they fly, I think they fly to Newark. To other hubs. But you take that hub out of there, like JFK, like LaGuardia, like Newark, and it really cripples the system. I mean, that's a whole big section of the metropolitan area in New York. But thousands of flight delays, which is still going on today. There are still results of that today. I knew people who flew into Newark today, and they were basically stranded for the past 20 hours at an airport because of connecting flights and delays because of what this caused. And this was just a weather. This was not an anomaly. This was not a mechanical or electronic issue. This was just weather. Bad weather came through the area, and it was a domino effect. Each airport closed one after the other because of severe lightning storms in the area. And because of just being down a few hours, caused thousands of delays up and down the seaboard. So Newark Liberty International Airport was added to the mix with outgoing flights shut down until 6:30 p.m., according to the FAA. LaGuardia Airport was eventually thrown into it, grounded all plans through eight planes through 8 p.m., according to the FAA status, with JFK being first. Announced that they would be grounding due to severe thunderstorms on the horizon. So they weren't even there yet. But it just goes to show how serious they take weather and how a couple of hours delays, ground stoppage at these airports sent the entire eastern seaboard and thousands of planes into delays. So it just goes to show how dependent we are on those hubs, which is why we push for direct flights at our local airport here as much as we can. They can't fly everywhere. I get that. But if we can get a couple of good places that they can go to, it opens up options. So it just goes to show, especially this being one of the busiest travel weekends coming up, hopefully that's cleared up. But with these storms that we have coming through our area today, Philadelphia right now, headed to New York and New Jersey, we'll see if we hit it again. It's coming up on 5 o'clock here at WILK. We'll be back.